We all know water safety and water quality are at risk. From 1,4-dioxane to PFAS and lead contamination, the issues abound. So what can be done to make sure the water we consume is not only safe but readily available? How do we make these water systems more safe, or do we need them? I'm David Fair, and this is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU. There's an Ann Arbor environmentalist who thinks he may have an answer as to how to overcome some shortcomings in the multitudes of municipal water systems. Matt Grokoff is one of the world's first net-zero energy building leaders and founder of the Thrive Collaborative in Ann Arbor. And welcome back to WEMU, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me, David. It's always great to be here.
You're using yourself and your home as kind of an experiment, right? You've worked with some students from Blue Lab at University of Michigan to implement a system for collecting rainwater. What is it about rainwater that makes you think we could improve upon water systems that, despite all their issues, provide the safest public water supplies in the world?
I wish everyone could see me because I have this huge smile on my face that we're being used as an experiment. I don't know. I don't know that
it would you characterize it that way?
Absolutely not. I think the experiment is this industrial era experiment of how do we make systems linear that don't mimic what nature does. There are no straight pipes in nature, and yet what we've done with our water systems and our energy systems and our food systems is we've centralized everything. We've concentrated them into small places in large amounts, very far away from where we use our energy and we use our water and we eat our food.
We're not far away from a time where we thought that was the better system, more optimal.
And it was with a much smaller population when we did that. And the solution when the population grew was to add another pipe and make it even longer. What we have now is a system that is aged beyond its useful lifespan. It is designed for a population that was much smaller, and it is what we call fracture critical. And that's an engineering term that basically means it's a linear process that if any part of it breaks, the entire system breaks. And if you look at Ann Arbor's water supply, it's actually pretty safe. Mm-hmm. That's not entirely the issue. But when you look at a water system and you decide what is a healthy water system, what is a healthy watershed, it goes way beyond our tap and it's much more complex.
Let's talk about the rainwater system that you've set up at your home. How do you go about rainwater collection?
Well, at our house, it's very, very simple, and it is not an experiment at all. It's actually things that are off the shelf that just about anybody can buy. But what the students that we worked with were attempting to do was just trying to just show what's available, give some tires to kick, if you would, to say, hey, when you come in and you look at a system that basically has a metal roof, so we have a clean water surface where the rain falls onto the roof. It goes into clean gutters that are also metal without any kind of chemicals or other things that can leach into that water. That water is then goes into a cistern, which is pre-filtered before it goes into that cistern, and our cisterns are about 5,000 gallons in total. And then it gets pumped into the basement where we have a filtration system, which is basically like a mini version of Ann Arbor's water treatment system, except that it is completely chemical free and it has UV filtration at the end of that.
You mentioned it's running through metals, and most chemicals are chemically treated.
Yeah, that's right. And so you have to be careful about what kind of metals you use. So we're using steel on the roof with what's called Galvalum, which is got what's called a declare label, which shows that it doesn't have any of the red listed materials. But if we look at the alternative, one of the interesting things that the students discovered initially when they first began the project, they took water samples from our rooftop, which was asphalt shingles roofs. They were relatively new, a few years old at the time, and they were made from recycled materials. When they tested the water, inside of that water, they found high levels of lead in the water. They found cadmium and other heavy metals that were extremely dangerous to humans.
We have plenty of chemicals and pollution in the air. In fact, the Center for Disease Control says rainwater is contaminated with pathogens and chemicals that should never be consumed without proper purification.
That's right. It still needs to be purified. The tragedy is that water all over the world, including in the upper atmosphere, is polluted. We have polluted virtually every corner of the earth, but as far as source water itself, it is still cleaner than much of our groundwater, especially in Ann Arbor, where our groundwater is unusable because of the dioxane plume and surface water. That said, we should be able to use all of those things. It's not do you use rainwater or do you use the Huron River. You should be able to have clean source water from all of those things. So first, we start with protecting those watersheds. Second, we start looking at how do we restore the ecological water flow in our engineering systems. So now we know two things that we didn't know when we created these big oversized engineering projects or these centralized systems. We know how natural systems work, and we also have these engineering skills. So if we use what's called biomimicry, and we mimic these natural systems, we can engineer to those natural systems. And the thought experiment we used on our house was, what if you followed a raindrop from the sky and imagined that the house was not there and went back to pre-development times? Where did that raindrop go? And we actually traced that path and watched the water flow through the property. When there was higher rainfalls, it flowed slightly off of the property and went into the adjacent. What were the soils like? How much sand is in there? And we found that on our property, the vast majority of the water went back into the soil and replenished the aquifer. Then you put the house back in as it is, and it's got asphalt roof shingles. It used to have an asphalt paved driveway and a concrete sidewalk and paved roads out in front. Now it's collecting all kinds of pollution, and instead of going back into the soil, it's becoming a waste product, a toxic waste product that's actually going directly into the Huron River and collecting more pollutants as it goes through that pathway. And now, instead of calling it rain, we call it stormwater, and we couch it in these really apocalyptic terms. Whereas by going through and trying to figure out how can you restore that and follow that raindrop, now you take the house and you plug it back in and you say, what if we could borrow that water from the natural hydrological cycle and become part of it through an engineering system? So by harvesting the water on the roof, putting it into a cistern, treating it to the various kinds of uses that we have, so different uses for our toilets, you don't need drinking water in the toilets, and different water for that's coming out of the taps for showering and for drinking. And then what happens to that water after it goes down the drain? Do we take that and we reclaim the water that's going into our shower drains and we use that for our toilets and we use that for our irrigation and things like that?
You're listening to Issues of the Environment, and our conversation with Thrive Collaborative founder Matt Grokoff continues on 89.1 WEMU. Speaking of which, Thrive Collaborative is at the fore of bringing forth the Viridian development, and that is to be a sustainable community. What role do you have rainwater playing in the development of that community?
Well, that's something we're actually working on right now, and it's really exciting because we get to ask the question, because it's a brand new development, is what does good look like? What should a biomimetic water system look like? One of the primary things we're looking at is first different types of water use. And really right now, everything that is within code is on the books, and we're looking forward to having a conversation with the city and really collaborating with them on what can we do to simultaneously create a better system and meet all of the city's goals with stormwater and everything else.
As it stands right now at your house, you cannot run it through the sinks. You cannot hook it up that way. It is not potable water.
No, it's not. It is scientifically potable water. I would drink it. I would certainly let my family drink it and guests drink it. It is absolutely clean from a scientific perspective. It is not considered potable water from a code perspective, from a legal perspective. So inside of Ann Arbor, you have to connect to the
municipal system.
To municipal system.
Outside of the certain
boundaries.
With the municipal water supply, there's so much testing, filtering, and regulatory control aimed at ensuring we do get the safest water possible. If we were to set up these individual household or neighborhoods with rainwater purification systems, what is your suggestion for testing and regulation to make sure it remains safe over a period of time?
Absolutely, and that's the most important thing here is safety and resilience and restoration of watersheds. So that is a very serious part of the conversation that needs to take place. And I don't necessarily have the answers for all of that, but I do know that there are other systems that do exist, like our natural gas infrastructure, where every single home has a gas meter and a gas line that goes to it that can leak methane into the atmosphere. It can kill families in their sleep and everything else. We have methods for keeping those systems as safe as we possibly can and for having those inspected. And I know that there's mechanisms for keeping decentralized systems as well. The exciting thing about a decentralized system is that when it fails gracefully. You have minor failures in small locations rather than catastrophic failures at the systems level.
What kind of reaction are you getting? Can you forecast a generation ahead and say, we're going to be heading down that direction?
I don't think there's any doubt that we'll be heading that way. We'll either do it by choice or out of necessity. You're already starting to see the failing infrastructures across the U.S. As we begin to develop new systems and repair old ones, more and more municipalities are looking at these decentralized systems. Fortunately, we have frameworks like the Living Building Challenge and the Living Community Challenge from the Living Future Institute, which they use the metaphor of a flower, that buildings and our infrastructure, like flowers, are fixed in place. They don't move. Flowers can't go somewhere else to get water. But they harvest all of their water on site. They harvest all of their energy on site. They are adapted to place where they are. And they're beautiful. And they work as part of a network of systems. They don't work in isolation the way our water and our energy systems currently do. And again, like the work that we're doing out at Viridian at County Farm is really going to kind of set the pace for what we're doing citywide.
Matt Grokoff is one of the world's first net zero energy building leaders. He's founder of the Thrive Collaborative, which is in fact putting forth the Viridian at County Farm development. You're listening to Issues of the Environment, a weekly feature produced in partnership with the Office of the Washtenaw County Water Resources Commissioner. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.